Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
You know the sound of thunder, don't you, Mrs. Garrett?
Of course.
Can you imagine that sound if I ask you to?
I can, Mr. Hickok.
Your husband and me had this talk. And I told him to head home to avoid a dark result. But I didn't say it in thunder. Ma'am. Listen to the thunder.
That's a clip from David Milch's suitably Milchian take on the Western, the HBO series Deadwood. The critically acclaimed show aired from 2004 to 2006. One of those acclaiming critics is Matt Zollerseitz. He's a staff writer for New York Magazine. In addition to being on Beta twice before, Matt covered the show while it aired. During that time, he was assigned to interview Milch, and the two struck up a friendship. Matt decided to self-publish the definitive book on the series. The story behind that could be a segment unto itself. The twists, turns, and tragedies that went into making it resulted in The Deadwood Bible, A Lie Agreed Upon. The book is part oral history and part show companion. Matt interviewed over 130 members of the cast and crew, including Milch himself, to get the inside story on how Deadwood was created.
Well, it's a funny story. He started out as a professor of literature at Yale, and then he got into television writing through a friend of his who he went to Yale with, who was on the writing staff of Hill Street Blues, which is one of the great television dramas. And then he went on to co-create NYPD Blue with Stephen Bochco, and he had a number of other shows that weren't as successful as those two. But he had been thinking for a while about doing a show about community and doing a show about the development of morality and a kind of a common code in a society. And he had this idea to do a show about Rome. He actually wrote a pilot script for it. And supposedly, it was a pretty amazing piece of work. And it ended with St. Paul being arrested by Roman centurions. He pitched it as, you know, cops in ancient Rome. But he had this meeting with two HBO executives, Chris Albrecht and Carolyn Strauss. And they had a meeting with him just to take ideas. And the first one he brought up was Rome. And he launched into this beautiful soliloquy about this Rome show he wanted to do. And Chris said, David, you know, this is probably the only network where you would ever have an executive tell you this, but we already have a show about Rome, and it's called Rome. And when David tells the story, he always, you know, he embellishes everything. But he said, I said, what did you say to them when they said we already have a show about Rome? And he paused and cocked his head quizzically and looked up at the sky and said, did I say Rome? But he went back and sort of recalibrated it and decided to do Deadwood instead. And most of the themes that he wanted to address, he was able to address through Deadwood.
Yeah. I don't think we can go much further without talking about the language of Deadwood. It's arguably what sets this show and David Milch apart from all other television. How would you describe it and what makes it so special?
Well, a lot of people describe the language as Shakespearean, mm-hmm. but some of the actors in the cast who are trained English Shakespearean actors said that they don't believe that's accurate. That, you know, Shakespeare is kind of a catch-all phrase for any dialogue that's elaborate and complex. I would say that it's more like a modern version of 19th century diction, where they kind of front load the all of the details and the context, and then the important part of what they're saying is at the end of it.
The pioneer has been assured of their imminent return. That's catchier. Thanks also to the aforementioned merchants. The vaccine will be distributed gratis.
Free gratis.
Free gratis is a redundancy.
Does that mean repeats itself?
Then leave gratis out.
What luck for me, Al, that you have such a keen editorial sense. Free. Distributed free. Period.
And then David would throw in some profanity as punctuation. And of course, the profanity was pretty notorious because even by HBO standards, it was extreme. I mean, think about the fact that The Sopranos was on the air at the same time as Deadwood, and people were talking about the profanity on Deadwood as being excessive.
Yeah, that says a lot right there. Yeah. The language can also oftentimes be incredibly poetic. Do you have a favorite line from the show?
Yeah, actually, it's a favorite exchange, which is where the Reverend Smith, who is suffering from, he's basically losing his mind. And he goes to visit Bullock and Starr at their hardware store, and he says, "I'm in a quandary, gentlemen. Are you Messrs. Bullock and Starr?"
"You're here with friends."
"Yes, yes, I feel that now. And I have various ailments of which we all suffer."
"And next morning often finds us feeling better."
"Yes. In any case, part of God's plan."
"May we walk you back to your tent, sir?"
"An evening stroll with friends. I would so enjoy that."
"Let's go then."
And I've actually written that in many inscriptions for people who bought this book. It's a solace having friends.
Yeah. David created an entire community of characters on the show. Were any of them a stand-in for Milch himself?
I think to some extent they all were.
Mm.
David is a person who has had a lot of substance abuse problems in his life, and he had just gotten sober a few years before he started making Deadwood. And I don't think it's a surprise that so much of the show is about addiction and overcoming addiction. And there are people who are addicted. A lot of people are alcoholics. A lot of people are addicted to opium, laudanum. But there are also people who are kind of addicted to power, addicted to money, addicted to violence, addicted to sex. And they're all struggling with it to one degree or another. And then there's also a lot of abuse. There are a shocking number of the major characters on the show are victims of physical, sexual abuse or both in childhood. And the repercussions of that carry forward in how they deal with people. And David was a victim of sexual abuse. He was abused by a summer camp counselor when he was a child over multiple summers. And one of the most famous episodes of NYPD Blue, which he won an Emmy for co-writing, is about a sexual abuse case. And the centerpiece of that is him, a character giving a monologue, which is essentially what happened to David when he was in elementary school.
Mm.
And Al Swearengen, the character played by Ian McShane, is David. He's charming, he's witty, but he's also a hair trigger temper and can use people when he's not being compassionate. And then the Powers Booth character, who's another saloon owner, is kind of a worst case version of David. He's almost like Al Swearengen with none of the charming parts. The sheriff with his temper is David. Calamity Jane with her hopeless alcoholism and her need for love is David. They're all David. Mm,
yeah, yeah. I think you're absolutely right about that. Yeah. How did the women characters evolve over the three seasons of the show?
Well, David and his collaborators were always really adamant that they wanted to have as many major women characters on the show as possible, despite the historical fact that this town was, you know, over 90% men. And the character of Alma Garrett, played by Molly Parker, was somebody who was not based on fact. And that came out of David's fascination with writers like Henry James. He thought it would be interesting to sort of take a Henry James character from you know, the village in New York City and put her in Deadwood. But there are a lot of characters on the show who are sex workers or madams. And they're all very different. Some of them are based on real people loosely, and some of them are just invented. But he felt like the predicament of women in that town was uniquely fascinating because they were so overwhelmed from every conceivable angle.
Mrs. Garrett, what male would not trade our small superiority of intellect to possess that gift of intuition so bountifully bestowed on the lesser sex?
Mr. Farnham, your meaning is beyond me.
I imagine you, madam, awakening the other morning, suddenly and for no earthly reason, convinced the camp was at peril. My goal should be spirited to Denver. I imagine you thinking, maybe as you brushed your hair, and without worrying the conviction or studying upon it, sending the gold away.
Because the camp's at peril.
Yes, madam, yes, peril. Worse than peril.
Perhaps you should sell.
Mrs. Garrett, had I your intuition, would I not have done?
I'll buy it.
And I think as the show went on, I think it was always good right out of the gate, but the more female characters they added, the richer that part of the show became. And that was also partly a way of showing that the town was becoming more civilized, because one thing David told me was that when these sort of frontier towns anywhere in the world get started, it's usually overwhelmingly men, and it's a really rough place. And the increased presence of women in these spaces shows the extent to which they've become civilized, habitable.
Mm. Yeah. Fans of the show will likely enjoy your oral history on casting and being on the set. You conducted over 130 interviews for the Deadwood Bible. What was the most head-turning story that you heard?
Well, for one thing, I had no idea how hard it was to cast Al Swearengen, who, of course, you know, was eventually played by Ian McShane. And David was adamant at first that Ed O'Neill, who was formerly the star of Married with Children, and had worked with him before, would be the perfect Swearengen. HBO didn't want him. David actually had Ed O'Neill audition for the role, and they nixed him. They actually went through that formal process. They also considered Patrick Bergen, this Irish actor who's probably best known as Julie Roberts' ex-husband in Sleeping with the Enemy, and Walter Hill, who directed the pilot episode of Deadwood, wanted to read actors from outside the United States. And one of them that he remembered was Ian McShane, who he'd never worked with, but he remembered him from Hollywood in the 70s, back when he was drinking. There's a lot of people on the show who are recovering addicts of one kind or another, and Ian is one of them. And they had a bake-off between Patrick Bergen and Ian McShane. That's what they called it, where they had them audition, not in front of each other, but sequentially. Bergen was good, but Ian McShane was sensational. And the reason Ian McShane, I think, was sensational was because Walter Hill wanted him, and he went to his hotel room the night before and basically told him exactly how he wanted to read the part. All's fair in casting, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. And Ed O'Neill, HBO wouldn't have wanted him, I'm guessing, because he was so closely associated with the Al Bundy character on Married with Children.
Yeah, one of the executives I talked to told me, he said, I just couldn't get past this hurdle. Hmm. Like, I can't look at this guy without thinking, that's Al Bundy.
Right.
What's Al Bundy doing in the Old West? Yeah. And it's a shame, because I've seen Ed O'Neill was on John from Cincinnati, and I've seen him in other dramatic parts. And he's a very good actor. He probably would have been interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, who can erase Ian McShane in the minds of viewers now?
That's true. Nobody, I don't think. I don't think anybody could. Deadwood's television run ended infamously short. Can you share the story of its early demise after just three seasons?
One of the things I'm proudest of in this book is that for years and years and years, people have been speculating on exactly why Deadwood ended. And Jeremy Fassler and I actually reported it out, and we nailed it right down to the day and the time of day when it happened. And it was a phone call. HBO had a number of sort of financial considerations, one of which was that they had a lot of incredibly expensive shows on the air, of which Deadwood was one of them, and they were under increased pressure to have good ratings and do well by the stockholders. And so one of the executives called David and said, hey, instead of doing 12 episodes, which is the normal number, why don't we do 6? And David, who was a very prideful person, he kind of overreacted. He took it as an insult. And according to Dayton Calley, one of the cast members who was in the room with him during this call, he said, how about none, and hung up the phone. And there may have been some profanity in there, which I've omitted because this is radio. And then David called Timothy Oliphant, who played Bullock, and told him, hey, I think there's a chance that HBO we're not proceeding with the show. And Timothy Oliphant apparently started calling other actors. And within a matter of a week, Deadwood was canceled because all these actors had started booking other jobs. So, you know, when I was in college studying English literature, I had a professor who he summarized the plot of Oedipus Rex as, who is responsible for this plague on the city? Oh, wait a second, it's me. And that's kind of what happened when, finding out why Deadwood was canceled is, it was the flaws in David's nature. Like, this is a Greek tragedy of television production in a way, is David throughout his life was defined by doing incredible things and screwing them up because of his impulsivity and his temper. And this was probably the greatest tragedy of all because it was his greatest work, and he intended it to go on at least one more year, and it might have gone on for two.
Some goddamn time. Man's due to stop arguing with himself. Feeling he's twice the goddamn fool he knows he is. I don't want to fight it no more. Can you let me go to hell the way I want to?
Deadwood received a CODA in 2019 with Deadwood the movie. What do you think the legacy of the film is?
Well, I like the film. And, you know, the thing I always tell people about the film is, like, I consider it to be a fourth season of Deadwood, like a trailer for a fourth season of Deadwood. And one of the things that defined Deadwood was that it was like a theatrical production that was shot like a movie, and it was made on this enormous indoor-outdoor stage. And this feels more like a movie in that the scenes are short. Like a scene that would have been 4 minutes long on the original show is 30 seconds long. Mm. So the rhythm feels different. And also, it was shot digitally instead of on film, intentionally so, because they wanted to get across the idea of modernity, so it doesn't look the same. But I think it's really quite beautiful, and I almost feel like it's half of a Deadwood story and half of a testimonial and tribute to David Milch. And that's why all these people came back. They came back for David, because by that point, David had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And the book is filled with stories of people approaching David during the production of the movie and taking the opportunity to tell him how important he had been to them, which was very moving for me to hear those stories. And sometimes he was cognizant and responsive, and other times he didn't even know who the person was, because that's what that disease does to you. Mm-hmm. It was very sad and very moving.
Yeah, you speaking of moving, you've written this very poignant piece about your visit with David Milch and his wife Rita in April of 2022. What was that experience like?
It was one of the most extraordinary experiences of my life as a writer. I found at first that it was sad to have to be introduced to David.
Yeah.
To be not introduced, but they remind, like, hey, Matt is here, Matt who did this, that, and the other thing. And Dave was like, oh, and I didn't know if he really remembered me or not. And we hung out at the memory care facility for a couple of hours and just talking about various things with him and Rita. And then at the end, we walked outside. I was waiting for my ride to pick me up, and David put his hand on my shoulder and said, I made a new friend today.
Yeah.
And it was very, it was kind of devastating. But then as I walked away, I'm going to tell you, I was in tears. I turned away. I didn't want him to see it, because he is a good friend. He's a good friend to a lot of people. And then as I was waiting for the car to arrive, I thought about it, and I thought, you know, the idea that David met me again and called me his friend is a great compliment.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Like, if he had no memory of knowing me before and he spends a couple hours with me and says, I made a new friend today, well, what higher praise could there be from one human being to another?
Exactly. Yeah. Matt Solar Sites, congratulations on the Deadwood Bible. It's an awesome achievement, just like the show itself.
Oh, thank you so much.
Matt Solar Seitz is the man behind the Deadwood Bible, A Lie Agreed Upon. If you're interested in getting a copy of the Deadwood Bible, and how could you not be, you can order it from Matt's online arts bookstore, MZS Press. Find out more at wpr.org/beta.